Morning, everyone. It has been good to be here this morning so far. I really enjoyed all the thoughts we've heard and talked about on faith. You know, if you get a text like the one Tim just talks about, that's when the rubber hits the road and tells you where your faith is. In a cafe table, or where's your faith in at that moment? I don't know if it's just me or if there's more things going on nowadays that require us to have faith. Think of the fires and the hurricanes and the mudslides and ballistic missiles and things like that. That these are times of faith. Where's our faith? Well, I apologize on the behalf of our congregation for the cancellation of revivals. That was unforeseen and a bit disappointing for us. Just all the flu, our elementary school in town has actually closed its doors. It's close to 40% of the students were sick, and so anyway, we will try not to give you what we've got. The title of the message this morning is A Workman That Needeth Not to Be Ashamed. Turn to Colossians chapter 3. That verse is taken from Timothy, but we won't actually be turning to Timothy. We're going to be talking about work and a workman. I worked with someone one time, and early in the morning, and it was cold, and we didn't feel like working. And he said, "When I get to see Adam, I want to have a serious talk with him about this work thing because this is his fault." But it's actually not accurate, and it's not fair to Adam. God ordained work before the fall. Man was created to have dominion over the garden. When God created Adam, He gave him specific work to do. First of all, think about naming the animals. I mean, that's a job. That's work. And God said, "I want you to dress and keep the garden." So they were working before the fall. So we get this a little bit mixed up sometimes that work is just because of the fall. And I want to see if we can't correct that. And because of the fall, work became toil and sweat and busted knuckles and all the things that we're used to before, as in working in a fallen world. And I'm not sure what work was like before the fall. It must have been just carefree, easy, joyful service, I guess. There was no toil or sweat or anything involved. But it was God's work, and responsibility and service was God's plan right from the very beginning. Work has been part of man's existence ever since. Isaiah 28, we could turn there, we won't. "But doth the plowman plow all day to sow? Doth he open and break the clods of his ground? When he hath made plain the face thereof, doth he not cast abroad the fitches and scatter the cumin and cast in the principal wheat and the appointed barley and the rye in their place? For his God doth instruct him to discretion and doth teach him." It shows a man is working there. And it says at the end, that I find interesting, God teaches him. So it's God that teaches us to work. And the question I want to address is, how can I be a better workman, an employee or a servant, a biblical workman? How can I be a workman that needeth not to be ashamed? And so God teaches him to work, and God teaches us here in Colossians chapter 3, verses 22 through 25. And we could turn to Ephesians 6. There's a companion passage there, verses 5 through 8, that give almost the identical words as this passage. But we'll stay here in Colossians verse 22 to the end of the chapter. "Servants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in singleness of heart, fearing God. And whatsoever ye do, do it heartily, as to the Lord and not unto men, knowing that of the Lord ye shall receive the reward of the inheritance, for ye serve the Lord Christ. But he that doeth wrong shall receive for the wrong which he hath done, and there is no respect of persons." So we want to use those verses as our outline, I guess, this morning. This passage targets employees directly. Not all of us this morning are employees. And I'd just be interested to know, raise your hands if you are an employee this morning, if you work for someone else. I am too. Okay, so not nearly all of us, but a good number of us are employees. So I come from the perspective of an employee. I've never been anything besides an employee since 12 or 13 years old, from mucking out sheep corrals to logging to working in a landscape supply yard, teaching school. And I counted it up, and I counted at least 10 jobs, or at least that's when I stopped counting. It didn't sound very good, but when I preach about marriage or child training, I don't have a lot of experience to really draw from my own experience. So I'm glad that this is one thing I do have some experience in, being an employee. I haven't always been a good one, but I do enjoy being an employee. I remember my first wage, I think, was around $2 an hour working in my dad's butcher shop, so as a schoolboy. Jesus was an employee. He had a job. He was a common laborer, and he's sometimes portrayed as a, you know, this long-haired, homeless kind of hippie with no job. But God had a job when he was here, and a haircut. He worked in Joseph's carpenter shop. So I wonder what kind of a craftsman he must have been. Laboring with our hands has always been an honorable profession, and Jesus exemplified that. Paul was a tent maker. You know, humans self-destruct if we don't have work to do. I remember being a logger, and breakup, for me at least, got very depressing. After a while, I didn't have anything to do during breakup, and you have 2 or 3 months of just kind of sitting at home. I guess if I'd have been a little more industrious, I could have found something to do probably. But when we're just idle, it leads to depression, sometimes crime, and it goes on. We say idleness is the devil's workshop. But God put in us the need to be occupied, and then he gave us the gift to fill that need, which was work, and that fills a real need in our life. So we said God doth teach him to work. What does he say? Verse 22, first of all, it says, "Servants, obey in all things your master." So first of all, as employees, as servants, let's get our role straight. We're servants. So a servant serves someone else. Some people would place this passage that I read in the context of slavery. I don't think that's quite accurate, because later on it talks about the masters then giving to their servants that which is just and equal. So we're talking here about an employer-employee relationship. So the primary role of a good employee is to be a good servant, not to become the manager, not to show off our skills. I'm just here to help you, employer. What can I do for you? What is your job for me? There's nothing demeaning about serving. We tend to put it in that category sometimes, but it's what angels do. It's what Jesus exemplified, and it's what God expects of his children. Remember, Jesus said, "He that would be great, let him be your minister," which means errand boy or waiter, attendant. It's interesting, the deacon is also in that list, of just along with an errand boy. So our primary responsibility then, we said our role is to be a servant. Our responsibility then is to obey the boss in all things. The boss is the boss. Sometimes we have to get that straight in our heads as employees. Our main job is to obey workplace policies. Even when I think I know of a better way, I'm the servant, and I'm not the boss. There's a time and place for suggestions to the boss. If you think of Naaman's servant, when Elijah had told Naaman to go wash in the river, and Naaman was upset, and he turned his chariot around, and he was ready to head back home, and his servant said, "My father, if the prophet had bid thee do some great thing," you know, he was giving a suggestion. So there's a time and place where servants can give suggestions to the boss. But thinking of obedience, there's really no room here for labor unions, where we tell the boss, "I'll work under these conditions, or I'll strike. I'll stand out front with a sign and picket." The Bible just simply says, "Obey in all things your masters." And that's, to me, one of the main reasons that we can't support unions. It's not biblical. Unions probably were started with good intentions to protect employees from abusive work situations. But the way it is now, the employees have tremendous leverage over their employers, which is just simply backward from the Bible way, where it says servants obey your masters, not become the master. So obedience to the boss is a sacred duty of a Christian employee, unless, of course, we're asked to do something wrong. I think we understand that. And that really applies to all of us, whether we're employees or not. We're all serving someone. We're all in that relationship of being a servant to someone, whether we're serving the customer or whether we're serving the next person higher than we are. Next, notice that it says, in the same verse, in verse 22, "Not with eye service as men pleasers, but in singleness of heart, fearing God." So I looked up eye service in Strong's, and that's simply sight labor, something that needs watching, not serving with labor that has to be watched. Someone whose best performance comes only when the boss is around or when they know they're looking. And so the boss has to kind of stay around in order to just kind of keep things moving. Not being, we hear sometimes the term being a schmooze or any other variety of terms that people use, someone who's trying to be on the boss's good side. That's just serving with eye service. but at the same time trying to please him because he's the master and I'm the servant. So when we're on the job, who are we trying to please? Ultimately, is it the boss or the customer? Or it says singleness of heart, fearing God. Is it our fear of God that makes me do quality work? What drives me to do good work at work? I came across this, and I'd be interested to hear what you think about it. All talents being equal, a Christian and a non-Christian working side by side, the Christian should do better work than the non-Christian. Is that true? I preached this message at Cataldo, and we had lots of discussion afterwards on whether or not that's true, because someone said, well, I know someone in my profession who can do these things a lot better than I can. But all talents being equal, maybe they're talented in a way that I'm not, but all talents being equal, the Christian and non-Christian working side by side, the Christian should do better work. I think that's true, because one man fears God, and the other man doesn't have that paradigm or that perspective. So that's something to think about. If I was building these cabinets for Jesus, would I be a little bit more careful maybe in how I did it? Or if this garage door was going in Jesus' house, would I do a better job? If Jesus wanted a storage shed built, would I change anything in it? Sometimes we want to work fast and get lots done because we know it'll make us look good, and if we look good, the pay is good. It all kind of comes out the way we want it. But if I fear God, I can't sacrifice quality for speed. So how much do I try to hide flaws at work? They say a good carpenter is good because he knows how to hide mistakes, and that's probably, there's a certain amount of truth to that. Putty can cover quite a few mistakes. We say, you know, you can't see it unless it's there, but it's something to think about. The customer might not see it, but in singleness of heart, fearing God, God sees it. So is that my one goal at work, is to please God? And that goes for work in the home, too, I think. This is, oh, it's good enough, you know, it's just for us. Now, we have to be real. At some point, it is good enough. We can't be obsessing the details to the point, am I actually hindering overall progress by trying to get everything exactly right? Or do some things really not matter in the grand scheme of things? But God is the one we're ultimately trying to please. For years, the Amish and Mennonites were considered the top craftsmen. Whatever they did, if it was Amish or Mennonite, that was the thing. Sometimes I wonder if that gap is maybe narrowing a bit, if maybe we've lost our fear of God at work. I know there's non-Christian craftsmen out there who could work circles around some of my work, at least. Something to think about. I heard a story of a young Christian man who got a job at General Motors, and he was doing his best, working hard, trying to get things done, and the manager came to him one day and told him, listen, you need to back off a little bit and slow down. Because of the way we're getting paid here, you're working harder than the rest of us are, and it's going to affect everyone's pay. And the young man said, well, I can't, you know, I've got to do my best. And the manager said, well, you either do it our way or you're out of here. He said, I'm out of here. He had some conviction. He wasn't going to work with iService. He feared God. It's singleness of heart. I appreciate that testimony. Singleness of heart also speaks to being loyal to the work that I have, to the people I'm working for. You know, you hear sometimes someone will say, well, I was looking for work when I found this job, and so if I don't like it, I'll just move on. But actually letting who I work for have my heart, be loyal. And that brings us to the next point, in verse 23 and 24, whatsoever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord. What does heartily mean? That just simply means putting our heart into our work. And sometimes, at least for me, it's harder to put my heart into a job when I'm doing it for someone else. I remember working at home, and Dad would want me to do, you know, project of fixing the fence or painting the shed, and it was something that I had to do, and so you did it. But then when I got my own place, suddenly there was a whole lot more fun doing those kinds of things because I had ownership in this place now, and I was trying to fix it up, and I don't know if you can relate to that or not, but having my heart in it, and that goes for work, not just putting in our 8 or 9 hours and making the boss take up the slack. Take ownership at work. Pretend for a bit that you own the company, maybe. Keeping the place clean, doing the little extra things that might not even ever be noticed. The buck stops with me. Just before Dennis left on the trip, they're down in Belize right now, he mentioned that the cabinet job I was working on, someone would be coming by to pick it up after it was done, so I was supposed to call them. And suddenly that whole job changed for me because I realized all of a sudden that buck has to stop with me. Dennis isn't around to explain any flaws or anything that might be wrong with it. When they come, they're going to be looking at me if there's something wrong with it. So then I was suddenly double and triple checking it and make sure everything was right. Because all of a sudden I had ownership. And really that should be that way all the time, that we have ownership in what we're doing. We also need to have our heart in our work, because God simply condemns idleness. We could turn to various verses. We beseech you, brethren, that ye increase more and more, and that ye study to be quiet, and to do your own business, to work with your own hands as we commanded you. Let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands the thing which is good. And if any would not work, neither should he eat. And I'm glad God made that a nice short verse so children could get it. If we don't work, we don't eat. And that goes for adults. The boss owes me nothing until I've worked a full day of hardy work. So I owe it to the boss, first of all, to put my heart into my work. And really, it's thievery to do less, to work half-heartedly, sloppily, and then expect good wages from the boss and take them as if we've worked heartily. Why then? Because knowing that of the Lord, verse 24, ye shall receive the reward of the inheritance, for ye serve the Lord Christ. So I said in the fall that work became miserable toil, sweat, and everything else. But in redemption, the joy of work is restored. There's still blood and sweat involved, but it becomes much more purposeful. It says, for ye serve the Lord Christ. And I find that interesting that this is still in the context of a work passage. You're serving the Lord Christ when you're out there working. Suddenly that our job isn't just a job anymore. It's what I do for Christ. How often do we ask the question, you know, how can I balance my job and my church work? You know, they kind of fight each other. When in reality, isn't our job church work? Isn't that kingdom work? We serve the Lord Christ. You know, I've wished already that I didn't have to work, just, you know, throw myself into kingdom work. You know, we get these grand ideas sometimes. I told my wife, it'd be neat if we had, you know, Bible college or something where you could just be all year long and get paid to do that and just be a full-time worker in the kingdom. But really, my job is kingdom work. When I show up at work, that's kingdom work. I'm here to serve the Lord Christ. And I think we need to see our work that way. In reality, that, you know, just being real, the two do conflict with each other a little bit. We can't get away from that. And I don't have all the answers for that. But it helps me when I realize that that's also kingdom work. It's not the good and the bad. They're both good. We have to balance it. Our job is a huge way of sharing our testimony of grace. I'm doing my best because I've been redeemed. I pledged allegiance to Christ, and so everything I do is for him. And the opposite is true. It hurts the kingdom of God tremendously to be lazy and incompetent at work. It's because it's at work that for many of us is where people see the gospel lived out. This is where the rubber of Christianity hits the road. In full display of the world. It's where the world gets to know us. I think we underestimate the witnessing power of our performance at work, how well of a job we do. But, well, there's this theory, maybe less spoken than implied, that there's real Christians who just sell out, quit their job, and just walking around telling people about Jesus. And that, you know, we get that picture, but there are real Christians that God has called to do that. But for many of us, God just wants us to be a display of what the gospel looks like in boot leather. What does it really do for me in everyday life? We bring an entire kitchen somewhere and it's the wrong color and the customer is tearing a strip out of us one side and up one side and down the other. What kind of a gospel do you have? Or when we're out and it's cold and windy and I run a screwdriver across my knuckles for the second or third time, that's when the gospel starts to shine. That's when the world knows. Without saying anything, here's a man who must have changed. When he's bumped, it's not anger and swear words coming out. Here's the real deal. When else is the world going to see it? They don't come to church with us this morning. I don't see any worldly people here this morning that came to church to see what your gospel is like. But they'll see it at work when you're out there in the mud and the snow and in work boots. So that's, I guess, part of the burden of the message this morning is I want to boost our perception of our jobs. It's not just what you're doing to pay the bills. This is serving Christ. It's what I do for Jesus. And it's my opportunity to show the world what the everyday gospel is like. So with that in mind, then, I think we should be careful of what kind of work we do. You know, obviously, it's kind of hard for a bartender to say that this is what I'm doing for Jesus. Doing only work that I could give back to God as a gift, serving the legitimate needs of the general public. Joe, back at home, had some struggles at work recently. This was before he started his own company. He was having a bit of a quandary with some of the stuff they were asking him to do at work. They were making these ARs, automatic rifles, and on these parts, he was needing to engrave different things, whether it be an American flag or a skull and crossbones, or sometimes there was some things that he definitely couldn't engrave. But we got to talking about it at church, and there's really nothing wrong with engraving an American flag onto a rifle. But when you think of it from this standpoint, that my work is something that I actually offer back to God. So this is what I did for God today. I put a skull and crossbones on an automatic rifle for someone. Somehow it doesn't quite stack up. And so I think he made the right decisions in what he did there and kind of stayed away from that. Turn to, in your Christian hymnals, turn to 581. Do we have any up here? I don't know if you all know this song or not. We're not going to necessarily sing it. I find it kind of fascinating, the different cultures of different congregations. Growing up, we sang this song quite a bit. At Cataldo, we haven't sung it once. And I don't know if you all... How many of you know this song here? Okay, you've sung it here. All right. Well, we won't take time to sing it, but I just want to read the poetry here. The time for toil is past and night has come. The last and saddest of the harvest eves, worn out with labor, long and wearisome, drooping and faint, the reapers hasten home, each laden with his sheaves. Few light and worthless, yet their trifling weight through all my frame a weary aching leaves. For long I struggled with my hapless fate, and stayed and toiled till it was dark and late, yet these are all my sheaves. Full well I know I have more tares than wheat, brambles and flowers, dried stalks and withered leaves. Wherefore I blush and weep, as at thy feet I kneel down reverently and repeat, Master, behold my sheaves. So do I gather hope and strength anew, for well I know thy patient love perceives, not what I did, but what I strove to do, and though the full ripe ears be sadly few, thou wilt accept my sheaves. Thou wilt accept my sheaves. That's the idea of bringing our work back to God. What I did with my life's work or what I did with today's work and bringing it back to God and offering it as a sacrifice. It helps me to think about the type of work that I do. Can I bring it back to God and look him in the eye clearly and feel good about what I've done for God that day? Verse 25, entitled this point, Payday is Coming. He that doeth wrong shall receive for the wrong which he hath done, and there is no respect of persons. Think about this. The genuineness of our faith will one day be proven by the quality of our work. 1 Peter 1 says, if ye call on the Father who without respect of persons judgeth according to every man's what? Work. Pass the time of your sojourning here in fear. For the Son of Man shall come in the glory of the Father with his angels, and then he shall reward every man according to his Someone say it. Work. We say, yeah, but that's my spiritual work. That doesn't mean my job. Don't you think it covers the entire scope of all my works? We make a big deal sometimes out of God judging every idle word, and that's good, and he will. But sometimes we also forget he'll judge what we did for a living and how well we did it. Don't you think that just makes sense? There are many kinds of works for which we'll be rewarded, and our workplace work will be one of them. So on the final payday, will I be a believer who went all my life with a bad attitude at work, just grudgingly waiting for the weekend, wishing for retirement, calling my job this curse because I'm in a fallen world? I don't think it's possible to have that kind of an attitude at work without it spilling into my spiritual life, or to have a bad attitude toward my earthly master without having that taint my attitude towards my heavenly master. So payday's coming. God sees my cell phone use at work on company time. And that kind of strikes close to home to me, you know, whether it's checking emails or writing a text quick or doing this or that. But we need to be careful about stealing time from our master. Maybe you have an understanding with your master, and I think there needs to be that, what type of cell phone use is allowed. But I'm paid to be there working. Dennis is not interested, really, in paying me to send messages to my wife. That's just not in the books. God cares about our work. He's a careful, precise accountant, and he will pay what's right. He'll be a fair judge. Payday's coming. So if God's going to judge every word of our tongue, he will certainly judge every work of our hands. He that doeth wrong shall receive for the wrong which he hath done, and there is no respect of persons. Turn to Revelation chapter 6. There's a bit of a picture here of what payday looks like for some people. Revelation 6, verse 15. And the kings of the earth, and the great men, and the rich men, and the chief captains, and the mighty men, and every bondman, and every free man, hid themselves in the dens and in the rocks of the mountains. So this was probably the first time payday rolled around. They wanted nothing to do with payday. They did not want to be there to pick up the check. It's interesting here. It goes right from the chief to the bondman, every free man, everyone was there. And these obviously are ungodly people. And we tend to place different values on people depending on the work they do. You know, if he's a senator, or if he's a doctor, or if he's just a mechanic, or just a farmer, or he's a manager. God doesn't do that. It's everyone in the same class. They're all in this verse. There's just no respect of persons. 1 Corinthians 3 said, every man's work shall be made manifest, for the day shall declare it, because it shall be revealed by fire, and the fire shall try every man's work of what sort it is. So how will it be for me when all of my life's work passes before the eyes of the judge of all the earth? I'm not saying that God is going to say, well, Johnny, you hung that cabinet crooked, you know, you shouldn't have done that, or Tim, that header wasn't level when you put that door in. But maybe something like, Johnny, you damaged my kingdom by your lazy attitude at work. Could God say something like that? You claim to be a Christian, doing everything as to the Lord, but at work you proved otherwise. You really didn't care about doing things right and thoroughly. So we all have work to do. Some of us are out in the workforce collecting wages. Some of us are at home doing house duty. Some of us are at school doing schoolwork. Let's do it for God. And let's appreciate each other's work. Wives, support your husbands. Appreciate his job. Thank him for working hard. I'm grateful to have a wife who thanks me for my work. And I don't think I do it often enough to affirm my wife in her work. Let's be faithful in that. Encourage him for the work that they do. They're usually working harder than we are, even if we don't want to admit that. And wives, work is not a necessary evil. It's not a product of the curse that takes your husband away from home. It's a gift from God. Let's see it that way. And let's teach our children good work habits by example, how we speak about our job. Teach them to submit to and learn from authority. Teach them to stick at a job until it's done. Teach them to be thorough. Let them experience the fulfillment of a job well done. Teach them the joy of serving. So remember, if you want to be a good, solid witness for Christ, then be a good, solid Christian in the workforce. Be a workman that needeth not to be ashamed, whether your work is scrutinized by man or by God. Let's kneel for prayer.